Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Sport Kite Podcast. I am your host, Nick O'Neill, and thank you for tuning in and listening. In this episode, we're going to go ahead and jump into the second part of the Curtis Jones interview that we did. And just kind of a note, we did record this earlier in the year, kind of during the summer when there were a lot of wildfires that were dumping smoke down onto the eastern seaboard. So you're going to hear a few references to that. We're just getting this one out now, but in this episode, we're continuing on with our previous conversation about sport kites and sport kite flying, and we're talking about a hard reset in sport kite competition, kind of changing the language around how we perform in public, specifically referring to things as performances, not demos. And then we're also kind of touching base on whether or not we are cutting ourselves off from the public for the wrong reasons. Like, are we intentionally pushing them away by actions we are doing? So we touch base on, or we really dive deep on that. And then there's a little bit about a disconnect between the different kite worlds, the difficulties of getting visible, and just a general void of information and how we can combat that, how we can be better about dealing with that. So I'm going to go ahead and hop into this episode. If there's anything here that you have questions on, or you have comments, or you have feedback or thoughts or any of that, I'd love to hear it. Go ahead and shoot me an email at info@sportkite.org. All right, let's hop into this one.
All right. So let's see, what else do we have? So we did Cocoa Beach. We've done kind of the involvement of the audience, all of that other good stuff. So, and we even talked about a little bit about alienating the audience, which I think is super important. So, from your perspective then, if we were to have a hard reset right now, which in a way we have no sport kite competition in the US. It's all gone, right? I haven't heard of a single competition happening in, you know, since right before the pandemic.
TI.
Yeah, the kids show, right? But from the AKA's perspective as the overarching body, there hasn't been any sport kite competition.
No. The last one was a couple of years ago at LBI, and it was me, Lisa, and Dennis Smith, I think, and my girlfriend's boys, two youngest boys, in a novice class. And I think maybe that might have been the last recorded anything. And of course for us, it was like WWF wrestling. It wasn't really, you know, competition. It was for the crowd. It had nothing to do with competition. It was to show what competition was. And I think that was the last time that any of us really did anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think my last entry from the US is, 2019 or 2020.
Yeah,
in the overall competition archive, right? Which, holy crap, that competition archive is huge. And I'm starting to add all of the European and Asian scores, so it's really, yeah, it's getting massive. With that though, since let's assume we're at the point of a hard reset, right? And we're gonna create the sport kite field, and be it competition, be it just enjoyment, be it what have you, we're going to create the community from right now. What do you think it would take?
Well, my perspective has changed over time because time changes a lot of perspectives. At one point I thought we were at a place that if we did competition for competitors, not for show, not for festival, just we go and we fly, and you know, whether we contact online or whatever. And I think we may still need something like that, where it's just competitors for competitors, and we get our yayas off on that. And I say that as a current kite show maker, wannabe anyway. And I can't get anybody if they don't know the art form. So I want the art form to stay around. I want the 100 to 120 foot line and large window and flying high. That's one of the other things that I'm noticing, even with the quad guys, and we've gotten lazy. Yes, it's easy to fly right in front of us 10 feet off the ground. But if you're going to entertain a crowd, you need to be up in the sky. And because most people, again, the common denominator, oh, they're supposed to be kites, not puppets. You know, they're puppet-like, but up there in the sky. And, you know, so the reset, I think it has to be, which I think it should have been all the time, is it has to be a little bit on the showbiz side, where the only way we're going to get more people involved in it is that they have to appreciate it. And they can't appreciate it if they don't understand it or see it. So maybe oversimplification, but I think it, people like, you know, music metaphor, people like going to find bands that are not pop, right? They feel like they're doing something that nobody else is doing. So I think it kind of got to go back to that, where you have your little secret society of sport kite competition people, and maybe see some growth out of that. You know, we used to have regionals to try and pull people in so that they didn't feel a lot of pressure to be, you know, back in the day when you had, you know, all these people watching you and you know, it's like going to the gym when you're 300 pounds and everybody else is skinny and you're like, oh my God, I don't want to get on this and try and stand next to them. The contrast is overbearing. So, you know, I don't know. It's a tough one. It may be one of those things that's just over. It does drive me nuts when I sit here and watch over the past couple of days, the cornhole competition online, and they got tons of sponsors, throwing darts, and they're not even that far away. I mean, they're not 10 feet maybe, and there's a crowd of people there, and they got crazy sponsorship, and they're on TV, and I'm like, I don't know where kites made the wrong turn. I don't know. Roger never got it
to give a little bit of perspective with what you just said, right? And this is kind of part of the reason we started Sport Kite Camp and why we're trying to make them happen a lot more and all that. You're absolutely right. There needs to be like where we go up and we do our thing, right? And we're all together. And the appearance in public should be like a special thing, right?
Another level.
So we've kind of morphed to now for almost all sport kite flyers, when we gather together, it's at a festival. It's in front of the public. So we've kind of flipped it on its head. That is our main gathering space.
Yeah.
So it makes it less intriguing and special. And it also takes away from the natural growth that can happen. I mean, when we did sport kite camp there in the Outer Banks, 25 people showed up and just committed to 2.5 days of being together with one another for the whole time, just flying, just eating, just doing all of this, right? And the level of energy that came out of it was amazing. And it would be great then if, you know, one of those people goes on to do a performance at a festival.
Yes.
Instead of us all gathering at a festival and then we send that one person back home to fly by themselves type of thing.
Yeah.
Right. So we've kind of done this 180. It's darts, cornhole, all of that. People play that at home and they have tiny little gatherings with just themselves. And then the stuff in front of the public is the pinnacle.
Yes.
It's the rarity, right? Yeah. It's not the main go-to that we do.
Right. So. And every day. And still, you know, when I do these events, depending on the model, I mean, you know, I'm still doing events where I know I go there and I just fly to the ones where, you know, I'm bringing out nine speakers that, and you know, trying to create a stage production and you know, hand off things to other people to be able to do because it gets so big. It's getting kind of thin. You know, Newport, you know, go back to Newport. We just got back online. And as I guess we're going to go into the event, being able to put on an event. That is one that Ron Kitt, who has a trailer at this park in Britain Point, in Newport, Rhode Island, and he sells kites there. And he kind of took over for Steve Santos and Sue Moskowitz, rest in peace, a mentor of mine on doing events. And we were knocked offline of doing that event for 2 years. And then when we went to come back, they wanted a whole bunch of money. So I think we lost 3 years or something like that. And enough people, because, you know, there was a lot of competition. I think AKA Convention was up there one time. And it's just generations of people have grown up watching the competitions up at Newport, Rhode Island. When Sue and Steve shut their store down and retired, it switched over to more of a show type event festival. And over time, Ron Kitt was who's running it now, was just a lie. He was getting killed monetarily trying to put that on. And so finally this year, he has basically made it its own entity instead of trying to just sponsor it all out of his pocket, make its own entity and ask for a GoFundMe. Ask for a lot of money. He didn't get it, which was kind of interesting because we get so many people. We figured get about 25,000 people came through there during the weekend. And we've had way more than that in the past, but a lot of people didn't know it was back. Advertising, as you know, is a rough thing nowadays for anything and everyone. So it's the other part, that's some of the complications with your competitions and your events. And, you know, a lot of kite festivals have gone away since the pandemic, pre-pandemic even. And economics are not making it any easier. And as of late, weather isn't making it any easier either. So between Canada, which they say is burning, but they never show any of you. I see all this film from Greece that's on fire, but all I see is smoke from Canada. I still haven't seen any footage. I don't know if you guys see any on the news or anything, but...
We do, but to give Canada some props, a lot of what's burning is kind of out and away, right? Yeah. So, I mean, we're over here on the West Coast, we're kind of laughing because we're like, first time, guys, yeah. You know, for you on the East Coast, because the last few years, the Canadian fires from BC and stuff like that coming down, it's blocked out a lot down here.
Wow.
So we're finally having a clear year.
we're taking your hit for you.
Yeah. Again, so first time.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like Mars for a while over here.
Yeah. But okay, so we've kind of, you know, hopped around a little bit with and just kind of talked about the idea of what it would take to bring back a sport kite community, a robust sport kite community, because I think we're out there, we're just so, you know, spread apart. Something I'm passionate about, and I saw this when I was president of the AKA, and of course have seen it since, is there is a huge disconnect between, for lack of a better word, what I call the AKA kite world and the rest of the kite world, right? Because people are like, oh, you know, there's no kite flyers out there, or the AKA is saying, oh, there's not that many. And I'm like, Prism just sold 10,000 Quantums. Where did they all go? Now, granted, a lot of those people, they may only pull their kite out 3-4 times a year when they go to the beach type of thing, right? But who's to say they're not a kite flyer, right? Are we gatekeeping and saying only people who are weekend warriors or committing their whole life to it become kite flyers? Like, we have this huge pool of people that are out there that have already taken the initial step of buying the damn thing.
Right.
Like all we have to do is engage them and pull them in. We don't have to convince them to buy anything. They already did it. Like, let's pull them in. And there's just this massive disconnect between this traditional, the AKA kite world, right, where most of us reside, and that's how we know all each other, and everybody else. Like, do you know how many times I run into people that have no idea that you can actually compete with a sport kite?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how many people I got that don't even understand that kite shows and kite festivals exist. And again, that would happen at Wildwood. And, you know, I used to complain to Roger Tuning and the lady that's now running it. And I'd say, look, you know, every time if you advertise, there's a lot of kite people up in the woods, up in the hills, that would love to know about it and come down and participate if they knew about it. And that kind of speaks to, again, look, my family has, my older sister has been in advertising all her life. My daughter is now writing and heading up teams for advertising. And between those two generations, a lot has changed. And how do you get people to know that your event is happening? How do you get people? I mean, that's your first start. I mean, you talk about chicken and egg here. You know, they got to come and see what the heck you're doing. And like you said, I believe during the pandemic, I heard that a lot of people sold a lot of sport kites. Now, granted, there's a lot of people don't know what they're getting into when they buy a sport kite. They're just thinking they're buying a kite. I run into those people all the time.
Yeah, and I will say that I ran into a lot of those pandemic kite flyer people that they're like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then they went online to find information. Because they're like, this is the only way I'm going to find out how to do this thing. And there was this massive vacuum. There was nothing. They couldn't find what they were looking for.
Yeah.
Right? And so, of course, one of my other passion projects, right, is helping all of us that are in this traditional kite community. Like, this is how you talk to normal people, right? This is how you engage normal people, certain hashtags, where you put stuff out, how you put stuff out. I was like, yeah, tricks are awesome, but trust me, I got more views from putting up a video of a damn kite bowl spinning, like, because it's more engaging for the public. And once I got them, right, then I can kind of reel them in and be like, hey, look over here. These people did some tutorial videos that you want to look up.
Well, I did help, you know that before I started putting on the shows, I was doing a lot of videos. I did videos for the AKA and also did videos for Premiere for their catalog. I did videos with Dodd Gross on just the basics of, you know, winding up their lines and folding up their kites and stuff like that, which was kind of funny because he had already made, you know, he's kind of like the father of the DVD, Kite Sport Kites. And it was like a full curve all the way back to the basics that, you know, he was putting online. And then I guess I think he did put most of his DVD stuff online somewhere, YouTube or whatever. But I don't know. I think there's a lot. When I look on there now, it seems like endless trail of kites of all kinds.
Well, so I will put a caveat, right? Yeah. Is that has become kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy or a positive feedback loop. You know what to look for. True. So you looked for certain terms which are put up by the educated people. And so now every time you go log into YouTube and you're like, I want to look up a kite video, it's going to feed you what you've already said is, yes, that's what I want to look at.
Right.
Right. And a classic example for sport kite, right? I want to go look up how to fly a sport kite.
Mm.
As an educated person, I'm going to call it a sport kite or a stunt kite, right? Because that's our terms for this tool that we use. That's not the terms that everybody else uses.
Right.
They may use trick kite. They may just use kite. They may use power kite. They may use, you know, all sorts of other terms that are not our main terms in our lexicon. And so when they go pull stuff up and they go, I want a trick kite, right? I want to learn how to trick kite. It pulls up all the goddamn fighter kite stuff.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. I want to do tricks and it shows fighter kite stuff.
You're defining the phrase, you don't know what you don't know, pretty much. Which does make it interesting.
Yeah, it makes it hard for those of us that are in the community to remember what it was like when we first got in, or how, what steps it took for us to first come into this community and understand, like, oh, because once you get your foot in, then you get people are like, oh, dude, you should check out John Barresi's tutorials, right? And then you go down that rabbit hole, and now you're on the Kite Life forums, and you're seeing, oh my God, there's all this other stuff. And then you're there, and then you're like, oh, holy crap, now I'm a single line flyer. And so so once you get your foot over that threshold,
yeah,
it sucks you in. And
it's a universe. There is a huge universe. You know, I think what also it speaks to is, I think kite stores, I would love to see kite stores be more responsible on, you know, when it comes to the single line stuff, they've pretty got that figured out. And most of this stuff flies, barring, you know, some issues on quality control from China. But for the most part, the things I really have a problem with is when they're selling some really cheapo dual lines, and you know, I go out there and I try and help them, and they're having what I call the negative kiting experience, when the father's going out there and he's going to show his kids how to fly a kite because he's dad, he's, you know, pack leader in wolf terms, and then he can't fly the daggone thing because it's got the crazy lines on it, or it's a handkerchief with broomsticks for leading edges, and you know, you got to fly it in 70 miles an hour or something like that.
They've only unwound 10 feet of line because they think it's going to be easier, right?
So any stores that I appreciate, any stores what comes to mind is Flying Smiles. They're kite flyers. They know what they're selling you. They know how to sell it to, and they're going to give you something that you're not going to, you know, have a hard time with and never, you know, fly again. And so I appreciate any kite stores out there, not just Flying Smiles, that hire people that are kite flyers and give people good information. Or at least, look, any of the big kites, I tell people, yeah, you know what? Why do I look at it? Because I'm flying a bigger kite. It's slower. It's easier to understand. And what you got there is probably not going to work in the long run. And you're going to wind up buying something bigger and better anyway, if you're that into it. But you may not get that into it because you're having such a bad time. So there's the catch 22. So again, any shops out there, I think, you know, one of my sayings that I told Joe down in Treasure Island, Florida, when I first met him and doing the first event, this is back when iQuad was still happening and stuff, and we put on our first thing with Windworks store there, was he was coming up to me, I was emceeing, and he was coming up to me and saying, you know, hey, we got a blue light special on revs. and we're going to, I'm going to sell these revs. I want to sell these that. And I'm like, I am not doing that. And later on we had breakfast or dinner, and I suggested to him, I said, you know, Joe, if you make a kite flyer versus a sale, you make a kite sale, you've only sold one kite. If you make a kite flyer, you're going to have a person with a garage full of your kites. And it took a year or two, then he got it. And that's why part of the reason why he's doing that thing with the kids and sponsoring and with Prism. And also, you know, big ups to Prism for sponsoring those groups down there. That's another thing that the industry and some of the other kite manufacturers and stuff should be looking at. They don't have to do the whole country. You know, Prism's got TI. If you got something going on in North Carolina, or if you got something going on the West Coast, if that model works, you know, see what you can do about sponsoring stuff and, you know, getting people hooked up. And if you got to get that one guy that can teach, get that one guy to teach. Pay him a little more, whatever. I think it's worth it down the line to go to your, you know, ask about how do we get back to the sport kite, you know, in the art form and getting it more in people's hands. I'm 60. I'm going to be 65 this year. I doubt if I'll ever see any of this on television in my lifetime. But, you know, it's still, let's go out. It doesn't matter. I mean, nobody's watching that much television anyway. So the live things are more fun.
That's where I cut the cord to my TV, about 20 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So I've only watched, for the longest time, I only had DVDs, and then, you know, streaming services started, which was awesome. And I haven't watched regular TV in forever. Like, I do every now and then when I travel and I'm at the hotel and it's like, oh, I need to zone out, right? And then I'm reminded, like, this is stupid. Like, why the fuck am I watching this, right? And so I kind of have always laughed when people are like, oh, you know, we need to get sport kites on TV, blah, blah. I'm like, the fuck we do? Like, how about we get sport kites as a feature on YouTube, like, yep, big enough that people want to watch? You know, because then you're going to get more views, you're going to get more engagement, you're going to get all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And I will admit, as someone who has been attempting to film and produce and do all this other stuff, good God, is it difficult?
Yes, it is.
So difficult to film sport kites in a way that is interesting.
Thank you. You're preaching to the choir. Especially when I use white kites or gray, yep, kites, and you can't even
see anything. God. I recently, when we did the South Padre Island Kite Festival, kind of near the end, we were kind of zoning out at the end of the day, because that's a paid performance, right? Yeah. We come in, we do this whole indoor performance thing. We're hanging out in the hotel afterwards, and we were joking about watching old kite videos. So we pulled up the Stranger video and Andy Preston's other one. And we're watching him, and I'm, you know, through the lens of history, mm-hmm, I'm like, oh yeah, man, I like, these videos were so awesome, and, you know, they're so engaging. And then I took a moment. I was like, oh my God, through the lens of now, these are boring as hell, right? from a flying perspective, yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, the thing that still does carry through and carries through to now is they showed a lot of lifestyle shots and the interesting otherness, which was awesome. And I think we need to do more of that. But the flying was, it's kind of boring to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, man, but that inspired so many people. So how can we create a video like that now? And trying to film it, good God, it's been damn near impossible.
You're up against a short attention span. You know, you're talking to a guy that made AKA videos, DVDs that were an hour and a half long. I've put up other stuff. I've divided, cut those up and spliced them up over the timeline of life and put them up and even go, and then go and look at the analytics and still see where people jumping out after 60 seconds, you know, of a 4-minute video. So, you know, I'm not sure how much faith we're supposed to put in that too. I mean, it's still all digital. It tells you,
yeah,
whatever. I think from what I've been seeing, we've kind of been surging over this past year. We just did a third year Babylon Long Island, and we blew up the place. All right. That was my mother. Coming in, give me a kiss. All right. So we did Babylon Long Island, and it was his third year, and we had so many people there. And that was one of the first places I started talking about manja, no manja cutting, and a few heads turned like, how does he know what that is? But to move on, we had so many people that next year, thank God, the people that are in charge of that area said, you got to move up the beach to a bigger area, more parking, more beach. And so there, I think there's opportunity for inertia. And I think we were going to do something at Newport. There was an idea, but it didn't come to fruition, where Jesse Capson was thinking about, you know, doing lessons. Dagos is doing lessons. Barisi's doing lessons. You got the camp doing. I think if more of us did that, I've thought about it, but I'm really busy because I got a couple of different models of shows going on. And speaking to burnout, I don't want to burn out. I've been around for a while. I've seen people come and go. And I think what I love about the Long Beach Island in New Jersey event is that we got all of it. We have all tribes of kite flying participating. So we have the show kites, we have the indoor, we have the music choreographed and in improv. And I think it's being proven. We keep getting people back and people are coming and staying. In the beginning, people didn't know what to expect. They came and they left like it was a car show. And we've, you know, nurtured by organically saying, look, bring chairs, bring blankets, you know, bring some lunch, hang out. You're going to see a show in the sky. This is like Broadway. You know, there's going to be some going. Go down the beach, take some pictures of some of these big, incredible kites, and come back and hang out with us. You know, check out. Also, but what turns out to be, which is the most important thing to them, is the candy drop, apparently. overall, that is showing a lot of people what can happen. And I think what would be good when we do have those opportunities to show what can be done with it is to reference people that are doing teaching, even if it's private lessons or, you know, small group lessons, 101. I mean, 101 kite flying is a great start, because even if they're just doing single line for the first time, it might take them into the other aspects of it. Like you said, finding stuff online about kites, now you'll be exposed. You might take a right turn in the sport kites or indoor kites or something like that. Oh, why is there a light wing kite? I mean, I'm kind of fascinated about the speed kites that nobody seems to do, but HQ had some, and it came about, they had, I saw somewhere, somebody said, called it a back kite, and it was a speed kite. And I don't know anything about that kind of thing. I'm like curious about, like, you know, how much line do you use? Are you using speed guns? I mean, what's the rules? What is it about? I know they don't turn with the crap, but I hear they go really fast. So that's a new aspect for me of sport kites. It's like, huh, what's this about? You know, and I'm not finding a lot of information. Like you said, the void, there's a void. You know, I even was asking Chris Schultz, and he's like, I don't know. It's happening over in Europe, you know, and they're around, but I've yet to see anybody use it or clock it. I think that there is a record is in Ocean City during a hurricane or something. I looked it up, but there is a speed, some type of speed record in the Guinness Book of Records. I don't remember how fast it was, but you know, it's just, again, the tribalism. I get discouraged when I hear people talking about, well, you like the show kites, or oh, you like the sport kites, or oh, you like, the, you know, guys, art kites.
Get over it, yeah.
Everybody together makes an incredible universe. You know, it's just like this spaceship Earth. There's takes all kinds to make it work or destroy it. But either way, I would say, if we could get people, you know, to open up with more lessons and go from there, one-on-one, you got to get the inertia, got to get the start to get their hands on it. And then from there, get into the music and, you know, don't hurt anybody, don't fly with the crowd, stuff like that. You know, and then because, well, I mean, really, that if somebody goes out, even in my local park, I got a great park that I go to, Overpeck Park in Ridgefield in New Jersey, and it's up high enough and they actually tell you a place to fly the kites. But you also get some people that go out there and picnic and sit out there. And if somebody goes out there and doesn't know any better and stretches out a 100-foot line and cuts a little kid, they may not want to have kite flying there anymore. So it for our own survival as a universe of sport kites, you know, we the education is important. So to put back to your what your question is definitely education.
Yeah, I've started carrying around and implementing on like some postcards and stuff like that I hand out for the Sport Kite podcast or just sport kiting in general, QR codes and a link tree, right? And yes, some of it goes back to sportkite.org just as a central feature, right? Because it's easy for me to go from there and help disseminate out people. But I do include on there, you know, like, go click this for some kite lessons in your area, be it John Barresi, or, you know, I have a list that I keep updating, right. You know, so regardless of your level, you know, so Bruce Schenck, Sky right. Pirate out of the Midwest, right? He's not a top level flyer. Is he competent? Yes. Is he enthusiastic? Yes. Awesome. You know what? He's a great person to go get a lesson from. You don't have to be John Barresi or Dodd Gross or, you know, top right. level flyer. If we can encourage more people to want to give lessons and educate and bring people in the fold, awesome. Right. I've started doing that, and I'm creating a handout, like a little QR code, link tree, business cardy packet. That we can send to anybody, and anybody can use it, you know, if you're at a festival and be like, hey, here's if you want to learn more about sport kites, here's if you want to learn more about kite festivals, here's if you want to learn more about single line kites, right? You know, you go to these various parts on the card and it will give you everything you need.
That's a great idea. Like,
yeah, just as a free resource for festivals and stuff to help share more about what we do, so that they can hand them out. And you know, and the beautiful thing that I love is we can always update the stuff on the back end, right? So the QR code can stay exactly the same, and we can just kind of keep updating, like, oh, we're adding more links, we're doing more of this, we're
right. So, yeah, I'm using a QR code for my scheduling, and put it on the trailer and stuff, because that's the first question I always get. Where are you going to be next? So now the QR is a good tool, and it's popping up and people know what it is. You know, how I'm not sure. We'll give it some time and see how well it works. I'm still getting a lot of phone calls for information, but
it's one of those things that I consider it an easy apple, right? Yeah. It's the low, it's the apple on the lowest branch. Like, right. It's kind of stupid if you don't do it. Is it going to give you the most results? No, but it's there.
Yeah.
Right. It's easy. It's there. You can do what you need to do. And it's the same with, you know, I include my socials, my social media stuff for whatever I'm doing, on everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy, right?
Yeah.
That's a nothing thing that I really have to think about. And then people know to go back to this Instagram, this TikTok, this whatever.
So. Well, let me ask you this. I just had this thought. This is taking a left turn, but have you played cornhole? What do you think is easier?
I have.
What do you think is easier? Sport kites or cornhole?
Cornhole.
Okay.
It's more accessible. It's easier to understand.
Master.
Yeah. It's easier to master. So I love throwing axes, and we have an axe range at our house, right? And axe throwing is on ESPN.
So there you go. So I'm kind of pointing at that because as we were talking about it, one of the things that as entertainment, we try to make things, the hard things look easy and the easy things look hard. And I don't know if that separates some people are looking at it, but I do know that because of the attention span, patients are not at an abundance right now in our world. I'm not talking about Kiteville. I'm talking about our world, our country, our world. And I don't know if that has anything to do with it that, I don't want to, everything is so Amazon. I can get it today. And if I can't learn this quickly, then I'm going to feel like a failure, and I don't want to feel like a failure. I want to, you know, play more candy game apps.
So I will say that there is a nuance there, right? And it's a nuance that I think sometimes gets lost in sport kites. And oh my God, I can't wait. There is a big topic I want to touch on with a group of people, and that's unintentional gatekeeping. And this kind of goes into it. But people are okay with jumping into something knowing it's going to be hard and they're not going to master it right off the bat with that short attention span. But the caveat is they need to be able to get a certain level of proficiency in a short amount of time that it feels like an accomplishment. Otherwise, why am I wasting my time committing to this? So back to what you were saying about a frustrating kite experience.
Yeah, exactly.
I've gone out there 15 minutes. I can't make this thing fly. Why would I want to continue struggling at this and doing this? And this is one of those major societal shifts that has happened over the last, 20 years, is we now place a high priority on time as a valued thing.
Yeah.
So that means, how much time am I going to dedicate to something that I already have not felt any success at? Screw that. I'm going to go do something else, right? Because I only have so much time.
Yep.
And unfortunately, a lot with sport kiting, right, is that once you get to a certain level, it's like you go really high. But sometimes that initial proficiency to feel accomplished, right?
Yep.
We forget about that.
It's Yes.
Yeah, I've had the conversation with experienced sport kite flyers, and I'm like, y'all forget that a takeoff and a landing used to be a trick.
Yes, I've said the same thing. Yes.
Right?
Yes,
like, if we can go back to base level tricks, is takeoff, go one turn to the right, one turn to the left, and bring it back down and land it at the edge of the wind window. That should be level one, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's all fundamentals. And when someone feels that, though, and can do that,
without,
oh my God.
Without hurting anybody. Yeah.
Right? They'll get a level of proficiency.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I agree. It's look, it's never ending. I'm looking up stuff and I'm seeing all these new tricks and stuff. I still can't do a comet. I'm still at the basics, but I was slow end, you know. I've been doing this. The only choreographed thing I really ever had was a Batman routine. And that was because down in Georgia, I won a TC Ultra Batman kite. So I took that and said, oh, what else I'm going to do is do a Batman routine, which I held on forever because I happen to like Batman. So, I've kind of progressed. I got some, a couple of Lamb's kites, and told him to build me a Lamb Hawk kite that if Batman ordered it, this is what he would fly. So he did that for me, and that took me to another level where I could finally do some Lazy Susans, finally, you know, do some helicopters and 540s and, you know, things that people have been doing forever. But, you know, I kind of stuck with the TC Ultra because hey, don't forget that old school, some of those old school kites can do stuff that the new kites can't. You know, trying to do a slide from all the way from left to right is kind of hard for some of the new trick kites. Look, I think I see Devin out there. Lamb is still putting some twists and adjustments. You got the Dingin and Barishi. You got, I'm interested to see it. It looks like Jesse Capson is on fire right now with his YouTube channel, which is awesome. This is all, you know, some people start and can't keep it going, and they pick up where other people left off. So I don't think we're totally dead. Like you said, Prism sold so many of these kites. It's just getting everybody to kind of, I don't know, connect the dots. So I think we're on a threshold somewhere along the line. If we can get back to the show part, I think what happened back, and I use Roger Tuning from Wildwood, looking at what happened with Wildwood, that was a really big budget. Now, I never had a chance to go to Wisca for the West Coast big events, but, you know, back in the day, trying to get an event up at Liberty State Park that we used to put stuff on and try and get sponsors, you know, the sponsors, they want to know how many eyeballs are going to show up, and they would laugh, you know, and if you said 2,000, which to us was a lot of people, if we can get 2,000 people at our kite festival, oh my God, that back then, you know, in the 90s, that was amazing. But sponsors would laugh because they still had newspapers and television and radio. Now we're in a different universe. Nobody, if we got 2,000-3,000 people, now they're licking their chops, literally, because, oh, that's a bunch of eyeballs that we know are there. We're not just depending on the electronics and the digital technology to tell us that they looked at it or came across it or thumbed through our advertiser. We know that our banner or kite or whatever is in their face, and the announcer is made there. So I implore anybody that's out there, I really suggest and strongly suggest that, you know, you get a headhunter for sponsors. If you're an organizer and you want to put on events, I've even suggested to Jay down at the Kite Loft. I'm like, dude, you put on this big show. Everybody on this boardwalk should be giving you, all the stores on this boardwalk should be giving you at least $50 or something just to get the kite flyers there or get the kite flyers some rooms, pay for their gas. And this is one of the things in Wynn Wolf's Traveling Kite Show that I've always been trying to do has been at least gas money. You know, I kind of get perturbed that organizers that kind of, I guess, Nick, I called it the the Tom Sawyer effect, where he was being punished for something he did, and he had to whitewash a fence, and a little kid came up and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm having fun. Oh, really? And after a while, he had a whole bunch of kids whitewashing the fence and paying him to do it. And that's kind of what happened to kite flyers, is like they spent all this money on show kites or sport kites or whatever, and they spend their time and money and gas, and they put on a show for a chamber of commerce, a boardwalk, a town, whatever, and there's money being made. And I'm not saying that everybody should be getting paid like, you know, Hollywood or something, but at least, you know, the people that are taking the chance and doing all the hard work should get gas money and, you know, a little bit more than a crappy seashore room. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
That is a long topic that we definitely need to touch base on. But we are also running up on time. And I have to hop out of here. So I just wanted to thank you very, very much for doing this. And I'm sure I'm going to get you included on one of the roundtables if you want at a later point. We have a handful of roundtable topics that we're going to discuss. And I think you've got definitely a good insight, not only from the show perspective, but also that topic I brought up of unintentional gatekeeping.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. That niche. Which are sometimes not intended, and definitely just a perspective thing from the outside. It looks like it, but it's not.
Yep. Yeah. So it's from the idea that, you know, we're not doing this out of malice. There are just like some little things that maybe we're doing that make it more difficult for us to be as open as we want to be. Right.
Yeah. Well, there's always, there's always love bombing with, I've been accused of that too. So.
All right. I hope you enjoyed the second half of this conversation with Curtis Jones. Again, I absolutely love chatting with him. He's one of the staples on the East Coast of the United States for sport kite flying. And he was happy to get on and do this interview with us and kind of just shoot the shit and talk about sport kites. And so we kind of bounced all over. Really, really love it. We talked a little bit more after where I cut this episode at. So we're looking at having him again on the Sport Kite podcast. So if you have any questions or thoughts that you would like answered from him, you can always reach out to me, or you can find him on Facebook. Just look for Curtis Jones or look for the Wind Wolves Tribe. They have a Facebook group. They have a Facebook page, all that good stuff. Pretty easy to find. And with that, if you haven't already, consider going to Facebook, find us, sportkite.org, give us a like and a follow. Also consider finding us on Instagram, kind of under the same name, and would love to have you drop a review about this podcast. What you think? Give us your honest feedback. I mean, yes, we would love it if you drop some 5 stars on us, because that definitely increases the visibility of this podcast to everybody else, not just sport kite flyers, but we want your honest opinion. So please do drop a review, review it on whatever podcast streaming platform that you're listening to us on. We'd really, really appreciate it. All right. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and sign off and get out of here. I hope you have a wonderful one, and I'll see you out on the beach.